Welcome to 2020, the era of innovation. The Automation Alliance podcast, brought to you by RapidMation.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this edition of the Automation Alliance podcast. Today, we have a very special guest in a gentleman by the name of Pavel Gimmelberg. And Pavel is an intelligent automation and agile evangelist with over 15 years of experience in the field of business process automation. So Pavel currently is the head of intelligent automation practice at EPAM Systems for Asia Pacific. And one of the things I love most about Pavel is he's very involved in the community. He's actually the founder of the robotic process automation community here in Sydney, as well as organizing the Sydney chatbots and virtual assistants meetups. So Pavel, welcome to the Automation Alliance podcast.
Well, thanks. Thanks, Sean, for having me here. It will be a bit unusual for me today because I'm on the other side, you know, being interviewed. But yeah, let's see how it goes and let's have fun.
Yeah, exactly that. So, well, I mean, I often see you at some of the user groups and it's always great to see you presenting. And it is kind of fun to do it the opposite way around today. And one of the things that I wanted to start off by asking you was often you're always on trains, planes and automobiles all over the place, seeing customers and organizing user groups and the like. So why don't you start off by talking through the listeners a day in the life of Pavel, and maybe you could do that pre-COVID and post-COVID as well, just to give us the comparison.
Yeah, okay, well, let me try. So pre-COVID, it was about 50% of my time I was traveling in a different countries and on a plane. And sometimes even difficult to understand which country you are in, you know, like, are you in Malaysia or you're in Philippines or you're now in Shanghai? Sometimes it's difficult to see. And met with a lot of clients. And what I try to always do when I travel in to get my meetup event on site at the country where I'm traveling. So it was quite a lot of fun. But the work day was really, really hard because it's always different time zones. And typically when you travel, you work from like 6, 7 a.m. till late night. Because, yeah, you have a lot of typical work to do plus meetings with the clients. Now it's all quite significantly changed, I would say, because now it's only work from home here from Australia, working from my house here. And typically I start my day with a bit of a running. I decided it's important to be in shape when you are in this lockdown situation. And then typically I have few quiet hours where I can plan what I'm going to do or reach out to some potential clients or maybe write something, like I like writing articles. And then at about lunchtime or afternoon, it all starting because my colleagues from all over the world starting to wake up and I'm having meetings and meetings with clients, with my team, with our development teams and our consulting teams. And then, yeah, just towards the end of the day, just becoming more and more intense until I just switch it all off and go to sleep with my kids. Yeah, so it's pretty intense day, and it's kind of day in, day out, very similar now. I couldn't say there is much difference. So when I have events like, you know, a podcast to meet up, I'm really excited because now it's slightly different in routine. And that's my day.
Beautiful. Yeah. And it's amazing how everyone's day has changed, right? So it's great to hear you getting out and you're taking up running. We might have to go for a run sometime together. But a while back, I did a half marathon. So I'm going to have to set that as a goal for you as well. And maybe we'll do one tomorrow. Oh,
I can't even run 10 kilometers.
Practice makes perfect, as they say, right? Practice makes perfect.
Yeah.
All right, good. So, Pavel, last time we actually saw each other, I believe it was just pre-COVID, and it was back in February, if I'm not mistaken, and I attended the chatbots meetup in Sydney, and it was around the trends for 2020. So I found that there were some fascinating predictions that were presented at that meetup, and I was recently reading a Forbes article that was titled The 5 Conversational AI Predictions for 2020. And in that article, they shared that the chatbot revolution has seen enterprise enterprises building a multitude of standalone conversational bots with different tools. And what I found interesting about that is they mentioned that there was many different tools that people were using to build these chatbots. So I'm keen to hear from you, and if you could share with the listeners, I mean, what do you see out there at customers? What types of tools and platforms are people using to implement chatbots nowadays?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. The number of tools in the chatbot space becoming so big and so vast that I couldn't keep up with that. You know, I constantly bombarded by different vendors from a chatbot space who claim their chatbot is better than others. There are low-code chatbots, no-code chatbots, and extensive-code chatbots. I think the variety of them even bigger than in RPA space. And that's totally crazy and probably is going to change. What I also see that because of this proliferation of different chatbots and because it is still a relatively mature technology, then it's starting to pop up in the different areas of the business. And they might not even talk to each other, right, inside the big businesses. And they just get a team of one person or maybe a couple and start to build some chatbots for particular intents. And then another area of the business building it, and another area of the business, and then the fourth area building some POCs. And then they put it on the different platforms and in the different areas, and that's how it goes. And I think if we talk about it, if it's early days, it's early maturity, this is fine. This is how any technology works. But I think it now time coming to getting it under the control and have some strategy about using virtual assistants, right? And in COVID time now, the situation is changed because there are significantly more requests now that you need to process online. The voice calling is becoming extremely important and you need to answer quickly. So I think the time come for the chatbots to actually go on the next level and be on a strategic agenda. But the interesting thing here, and what we also discussed in our meetup in early February, that you know that 2016 was a year of a chatbot. So 2015 was RPA, 2016 was a year of a chatbot. I remember reading about it in a few journals. And then kind of 17, 18, and 19, nothing really changed. Technology-wise, it's all of the similar level. And from use cases-wise, it's all on the similar level. But I think 2020, we started to see this pick up again in the interest for them and looking how they can provide strategic advantages. I personally think the reason behind it is the proliferation of voice assistants, Alexa, Google Home. I think this is this voice part technology becoming so important in our life that now we would value having this channel. Because remember when chatbot business case was created, everybody talked that it is good to have one platform where you can talk. So you chat in your social channels and then you can chat through the same channel in a text and kind of replace user interfaces. And I do not think that lived up to expectations actually, because it is still, if you're at your laptop or at your mobile phone already, probably it would be better if you can have native interface with some a bit of graphic. But when you're driving a car or when you're putting your kids asleep and it's completely dark and you cannot switch on your phone, there are still some things you can do through voice assistants. And that is, I think, how the chatbots now becoming more important. And if you saw the film Her with Joaquin Phoenix, it was like a very interesting movie where you can see what can be a future of the chatbot, you know, or virtual assistant. It basically can provide you any service. It can be constantly online with you and help. And this is what I think in the long-term future is going to happen. But short-term, yeah, I think the company is starting to look at it from a strategic point of view, how it can provide a better customer experience and how it can provide higher revenues for them. And the company is starting to look at it strategically. Still early days, but I think the tide is changing now.
Yeah, amazing insights there, right? And it actually takes me back. And I was just thinking, as you were talking through that, back in 2016 or 2017, I believe we presented at Microsoft Build. And back in those days, we actually built a chatbot on the Microsoft Bot framework. And as you said there, we actually tied it up in those days with some of the Cortana and Skype integration that was available, where you could talk to this chatbot, right? And it's amazing how kind of nothing evolved too much over the last few years. And then suddenly we get to 2020 and it looks like it's a again, come back up to the forefront. So certainly going to be interesting to see how that evolves over the coming weeks and months ahead. And especially with COVID, right? I mean, we've been involved with some projects where as soon as COVID hit, we actually put up some chatbots for customers just to be able to self-serve information to their employees, to tell them about, I guess, what the latest regulations were. Could they come into the office? Could they not? So there's some innovation that really accelerated, I guess, that chatbot momentum as well, specifically fueled by the COVID, pandemic. So very, very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Yeah. All right. Okay. Moving on to about automation as a boardroom imperative, right? So in the last episode, I spoke with John Pickering from Deloitte, and we chatted about a few of the key findings from the last Forrester report, which was COVID-19 just made automation a boardroom imperative. And in that report, according to that piece of Forrester research, they state, as we emerge from the crisis, firms will look to automation as a way to mitigate the risks that future crises pose to the supply and productivity of human workers. And they go on to say, digital workforces will take on strategic urgency. The footprint of intelligent automation has grown with increases in AI capability. Meanwhile, the value of a digital workforce is as compelling for large-scale risk mitigation as it is for cost. So I thought that was a really interesting statement in that, and I'd love to get your thoughts on that about it being a boardroom imperative and how strategically important a digital workforce will become.
Yeah, so honestly, I think that we are not there yet. When the COVID hit, the first reaction was a panic from everybody, cutting the budgets, cutting any innovations, everything. Now we are settling in this space, probably a few months in. We understand what risks it poses to the companies, what challenges and what to do. I see now the returning of these discussions. But I haven't been in these boardrooms, seen these discussions, to be honest, about chatbots or about like intelligent automation in general. I do believe it is a crucial, and this is absolutely the strategic advantage that companies can have. But I'm not sure if this discussion at this moment happening. Yeah. One of the reasons I think is because the intelligent automation is still sits somewhere in the middle between the business areas and the IT areas. And somebody need to take a responsibility for driving it, right? IT, business, or maybe CEO level. I hope what is going to happen from these boardrooms, it's going to actually be driven from a CEO level, right? Just right from the top. And the most successful implementations I saw of intelligent automation and the percentage of penetration of intelligent automation in the companies is where it actually has been driven by CEO directly from the company. He had a vision of this one, and we even measured, you know, it in the form of percentage of your digital workforce compared to the workforce the company have overall. And if it's over 5%, then you can talk that, yes, it's probably a boardroom discussion and it's very, very important. Yeah. So, yeah, maybe Forrester participated in these calls with boardroom. I haven't seen that at this moment, but it's definitely should be this discussion, right? Because the intelligent automation provide very big benefits for the companies. And if pre-COVID, these benefits was mostly about efficiency gains and like some things around it and revenue generation, today it's about sustainability of the business. Because if business could not operate with this environment, if it's becoming difficult because the employees couldn't just go to work, or maybe they're not allowed to work from home, then these businesses are not going to survive in the new environment. And I do not think COVID is going to go away in a month or two or three, right? So it's a change of paradigm that we need to adopt. And it definitely should be in these boardroom discussions, because it provides tremendous benefit if it's done right.
Yeah, I agree with you more. And one word that came to my mind there was the word resiliency, right? And making businesses more resilient. Because as you say, in the coming weeks and months, I don't think COVID is going away anytime soon. And businesses need to make sure they gear themselves up for resiliency. And these digital workforces can certainly play a key part in that.
Yeah, it's like the crucial, I think. I haven't seen it. It's very rare that a business can do completely without intelligent automation. Yeah? So it definitely should be there. But also another reason why this should be on agendas in boardroom, because of the effect it can have on the future of the workforce and workforce planning. Because the more technology mature, the more penetration we see, the more changing of the roles happening in the companies, and reskilling should happen, right? So it is not just about automating some of the processes. It's about the changing of a mindset of every employee within the company to how to work together with the bots, how to get the most of the bots, how to properly set up tasks for them, right? How to get into the thinking of the bots and how they can support. But it also means that probably less number of employees should be needed for some of the companies. So what we are going to do, how we are going to create additional value so companies can keep their employees, companies can increase their revenues, right? So there is a lot of things and a lot of consequences of this discussion and this automation is going to happen. So that's why I think it definitely should be on these boardroom agendas.
Yeah, 100% agree. All right, awesome. Let's change gears a little bit. So often what we're hearing about at the moment is post-COVID, right? And post-COVID is an interesting term because I guess sometimes we're actually still in the midst of this whole thing. But there was a poll done by Harris Poll that was released earlier this month, showcasing the results for the accelerating automation, how businesses are adapting to a post-COVID world. And that survey was actually commissioned by K2, which is a digital process automation company. And in that survey, it dives into how businesses are adapting to COVID-19 and how they're preparing for business continuity in the future with process automation. And some of the highlights from that survey are as follows. So they said 80% of businesses are facing new challenges related to COVID-19. 60% need to develop new processes to address COVID realities. And then they go and say 59% are having challenges maintaining operational efficiencies in a distributed environment and enabling remote employees. So there's nothing too surprising from the above stats, as we've seen these challenges come up with our customers in the media and being verified by many of the analysts out there. But the one finding that I found surprising was that the survey finds that 1/3 of companies are having challenges meeting customer satisfaction goals and expectations in the era of COVID-19. So I mean, 1/3 is a significant number there. Keen to hear what your thoughts are on that.
Well, I would be interested to see what the percentage was before COVID, to understand if it's the case or not. But I'll give you an example of how some of the companies work. And it was during COVID, one of our famous telecom providers in Australia. And it was my personal experience, it's funny that. And I rated them like a 0 out of 10 for getting this experience. So what happened, I received a bill from them, and this bill was higher than the typical bill. So I thought, what's happened? I couldn't understand. I tried to get connected to the customer service. I spent quite significant time on the phone. I tried to go through chat. It didn't really work well. The chat was only available from an account where I should log in. And I couldn't log in because something happened with my account. So I went through some hoops, you know, went into login, talked to them. They mentioned, yeah, there was a bill. So they helped me to recover my account. I recovered the account, and then I saw it was like a late payment fee. And well, late payment fee was because the direct debit didn't work. And direct debit didn't work was because there was something wrong in their systems a few months ago. And every time I receive this message, you know, that I need to pay because direct debit didn't work out well. So yeah, I just couldn't log in properly to my system and couldn't bother spending an hour on the phone. So I just paid manually. And it happened like 6 times. And yeah, one time I maybe missed it by 1 day. So they charged me. And I tried to connect to them and say, well, guys, I don't worry about this late payment fee, but your customer experience is not really good because you guys knew about the problem for such a long time. You even know that I personally went to their office to fix this problem. They promised me it was fixed and it wasn't fixed, right?
Yeah.
And they did nothing. They even didn't respond to me. So, yeah, well, that's why at least 1/3 of the companies have this problem. But yeah. Imagine now, if it's headed to automation, I decided to write to them because I know how to fix this problem very, very easy. It's just incredibly easy, right? You're just setting up a board that monitors these unusual things. Well, if somebody direct debit didn't work for 6 months, it's probably a problem there. Yeah? And probably you have an unhappy customer who needs to spend some time manually. Just try to reach out to him before, right? Before this problem happened. And try to mitigate it, and you will get a loyal customer. But instead, just nothing happening, and they are too busy. So maybe they're too busy. Maybe they always was like that. But this is why we have problems with customer experience. And I always say that, like, in my opinion, right, the best conversation you can have with your client is no conversation. Right? You need to do before the problem appear. You probably already know it will appear, and you can mitigate it. Just imagine if you like have your phone insurance, for example, and you dropped your phone, and then maybe next day you receive email to you saying that your claim has been processed, even if you didn't make your claim, because your phone can say that there was a problem, right? And it probably has a screen damage or something and can put this message somewhere. So we can create significantly better customer experience by using just simple intelligent automation pieces, right? So I don't think it's actually COVID affecting it. I think it's just the general, we didn't have that good customer experience overall before. What COVID is affecting is the stress level of people, right? And our tolerance levels. We locked down, we're not happy, right? We're already stressed and it just added to the stress. So I think it's probably just highlighting this overall situation. Yeah? I do not think that it's because the companies couldn't properly adapt. But I saw some examples where it was the case. One of the companies, their contact center didn't work from home, so they couldn't move it to from home work. So they basically didn't have contact center anymore, only emails or chats. And this is a pretty scary thing, right? Because contact center from home is easy thing to do, but it looks like they never had this in plan and their software couldn't allow it to do. So, I think what COVID is doing is just highlighting the problems that have been there before that should be mitigated. So that's my opinion why we see that percentage.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's such a great story to share, right? And I think one of the quotes I really liked of yours there is the best conversation to have with your customer is no conversation. And I really like that because with all this amazing intelligent automation technology we have nowadays, we can use some artificial intelligence to predict things like sentiment or patterns. And we can use that data to obviously drive different decisions that can actually lead to superior customer experience, right? And that's what customers and companies should be focusing on is that superior customer experience.
Yeah, exactly right. You just want, you know, the concept, you want job to be done the easiest way if it's done without your involvement. Well, let's focus on that. That's what we want to do. That's what intelligent automation for. Job done without any involvement. That's our goal.
Very interesting, right? All right, and last one on COVID for you. So I've often said that COVID, there's a meme going around that says, what has accelerated digital transformation in your company? And it's kind of like the options are CEO, CIO, and COVID. And then COVID is circled, meaning that that's been the accelerator of digital transformation, right? So one of the things that I've also seen it accelerate is innovation, right? Because I think people overnight have managed to innovate and create solutions for problems that could have taken weeks, months, and years to fix prior to COVID. So I'm keen to hear, have you seen any major tech innovations that have come out due to these COVID-19 ramifications?
I couldn't recount like exactly how many was there, but I heard a few stories, quite interesting one. And one story was, I don't remember exactly company who did it, but the company before COVID, they estimated that they need to create a better online experience. It's a like retail shop, and they need to create a better online experience for what they can do and to increase the volumes of the of online sales. And they did estimations that it would cost them like $3 billion, I think it was maybe $15 million or $50 million to do that and to increase it by, to double it basically. And it will take them 3 years to do so. So they put a plan on the table before the boardroom and it was sitting there. COVID happened. Online retail grew by 3 times for this company, and they spent only like a couple of million dollars to do that, you know? So nothing changed except all the circumstances. So this is how we can adapt. So what we think is possible to do, yeah, it's all in our mind only, in our head. In real life, you can do much more with much less. But we never think about it, right? So when you're trying to solve the problem, how to improve efficiency by 10%, or how can I grow my online sales channel by 10%, you will come with a plan how to do it by 10% and that much money. But if somebody would say you, well, you've made, either you do it in a, like 3 months time, you double it or you lose your job, you will find another way how to do it and you probably double it. So there are ways how a lot of things can be done in the stressful situations. And there are a lot of innovation happening there because you're totally changing the way you think about what is possible and what is not. Because if you're in lockdown, if you couldn't do any on-site sales, you do not have other choice and you're coming up with the solutions. And if you have a choice, we're not coming up with the solution. And this is the key challenge. And this is what I see. The innovation is actually growing because of these pressures, because there are no other options. And we people are very good at innovating. So that's what I see. But in terms of the specific, like unique things that has been done, I see it's more just the progress. Like, you know, the Zoom now grow by 20 times and it proved that actually cloud technologies works very well. We're doing a lot of projects about the digital first, you know, creating a mobile application, web platform, cloud platform, because everybody's moving into this space. But from this point of view, I think it's just, you know, like gradual innovation. So the technology that has been there already, they're just gradually growing. I couldn't recount an example where it was a totally something out of the blue, some total innovation. What I see also, what is changing though, and I can say it's still type of gradual innovation, that many companies now, when everybody is working from home, everybody in the same circumstances, the agile started to work better. Delivery started to work better. Because the main problem that I saw in delivery with an agile, for example, was that there are two teams, one team in one location, another team in another locations. They sit together in the rooms and you couldn't hear who is talking what. And it's difficult to collaborate in this environment. But if you, everybody is in the same position, everybody is at their computer, collaboration level growing significantly because now you see a face, now everybody can chip in. everybody becomes responsible, everybody can draw something. And the level of communication and the level of participation grow. So that's what I see. But in terms of like pure innovation, things couldn't recount.
Yeah. So again, some really great insights there. And that actually reminded me of one of my favorite quotes by Nelson Mandela. And is that quote reads, it always seems impossible until it's done, right? And as you said there, right, people always think that things can't be done, but when they're faced with no choice, people can innovate really quickly and get through some of the challenges that seemed very hard to climb before.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think now is the time when it's going to go more and more and more. Yeah. Though in Australia, we kind of a bit on the plot, you know, with all this job keeper and job seeker and everything, we just went into like a, how to call it, like a pause state, right? So there is no need to innovate. Yeah. So that's I think we'll see how it goes later, but I do not see there is a huge urge for innovate at the moment. But we do need this urge. Then we can change. There are a lot of things that can be done.
That's it, right? And it's certainly going to be interesting come the end of September if JobKeeper actually stops, and we'll certainly see some innovation then, right?
Oh, we will see many new businesses.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, excellent. So moving on to the next topic, and I'm sure you would have seen the latest news this week in the RPA industry, and that UiPath raised another $225 million in their Series E funding round. And I believe that kind of values them at over $10.2 billion. Mm-hmm. And there's obviously different words you can use. So unicorn is for kind of a billion-dollar type business. And I believe there's a word called decacorn, which refers to something that's a $10 billion-plus business, right? So
yeah.
A decacorn that right there for us. But I'm interested to hear from you. I mean, with automation becoming a boardroom imperative, a new urgency, innovation happening out there, it'll be interesting to see how UiPath spend that $225 million, right? So, Paul, here's a question for you. If you had the $225 million and you were responsible for product at UiPath, how would you look at investing those dollars to get the best return?
Wow, well, that's a very interesting question. Well, look, I think from the technology point of view, the UiPath is a great product, right? And it has all of the right components in there. So I know there are some of the areas like process mining where it needs a lot of investments, but I think this is not enough money to make a breakthrough from technology point of view, and it's too much money to just spend on some increase in, you know, like in sales and marketing. What I think is important to do is probably to spend it to create ecosystem and grow this ecosystem better, invest it in education and in changing how people think about automation. There are many courses about how to become an RPA developer, for example, right? And everybody's jumping on these courses. But it's not just about being a developer. It's about how you think differently when you're developing a bot, right? Because the bots, the process you automate with the bots, you need to prepare them properly. You cannot just take any process and go for it. You need to prepare it. You need to know some tips and tricks how to do that. And I think this part of education is what is missing at the moment. Eh? How to work together with the bots, how to get most of the results from the bots, how the companies can scale themselves, for example, right? So this is what I would invest into, to help the companies to scale, to help the employees within these companies to reskill properly, but not just to become a developer, but to create a full ecosystem. Some people can be developers. Some people can be good at transformation and creating the bots. Some people good at managing the bots and giving them right tasks. Some people good at looking at what bots are doing and optimizing them. I believe there are a lot of job opportunities in this space potentially. And we can go significantly deeper in the penetration of the processes within the companies. So that's what I would be spending significant amount of money for, because it essentially from the financial point of view for the companies, it will create a demand at scale. I do not see other ways to scale. There is a way with attendant bots, right, to give everybody a bot, and from licensing point of view, you scaled. But from the value point of view, did you or not? Because you scaled only when it delivered the value for the individuals, right? And how all these individuals can get value? Well, only if they understand how to do it, how to find opportunities for them, and how to work together with the bots. So I think that's something that is maybe a bit underinvested in the moment.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, right? So I think we often hear of the terminology where they refer to top-down processes, and those are kind of the center of excellence type-driven processes. But I think what you're referring to there is what we call the bottom-up processes, right? Where you can actually take normal business users with the correct tools and technologies, and sometimes those people are referred to as citizen developers, and upskill some of those people to be able to create their own automations, and that really creates that automation scale. Now, to your point, right, because not everyone is a developer, and funny, I was just having a conversation yesterday because we're setting up a citizen developer center of excellence at one of the customers we're working at. And actually what we've decided to do there is put together pods of people, right? So basically these pods of people is some people are going to be these citizen developers, some people are going to be change agents, some people are going to be business analysts, and putting together those pods of people, we're hoping to get significant scale with that bottom-up approach, exactly to your points that you just mentioned there. So really, really interesting.
Yeah, and I think it's the only way because financially, right, you could not afford going with a full-scale development of the bots for the tail. Yeah. And this is a famous, you know, this famous graph from the Blue Prism. It was like many, many years ago released when you see that the process valiant, basically the number of processes, and you can see that it's a law of diminishing returns because the farther you go towards the tail of the processes, the less business value it provides for the whole company. But it still provides a lot of value for the individuals, for the employees within this company. And it's still a huge percentage of the overall business of the company. And the way to attack the tail is to have this proliferation of the internal developments within the company and education of people, how they can do it, how they can find opportunities. Yeah. So this is, you're doing it this way. And I think that's what is going to drive this demand for intelligent automation. And then once people understand these simple concepts like RPA and how to use that, right, then machine vision, document understanding started to pick up, machine learning things and the intelligent chatbots. So it's all started to grow. And over time, you're starting to see very interesting thing. And you can notice it, I think, only in the companies who are at the high level of maturity in intelligent automation, you started to see that when you're looking at automation of the process, this process already need to do something down the line with another bot, and it probably gets some information from another bot. So you started to see that there are different bots talking to each other, and you see a second level of optimization you can do when you optimize the bot-to-bot relationship. There are a lot of interesting concepts started to grow when you have that scale, but you need to have a particular scale. I mentioned it's about 5%, I think, of the workforce is bots. At this level, you started to see this scalability, very good synergies.
Yeah, going to be an exciting few months and years ahead of us to see how that progresses.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's move over to the next 6 months, right? So we're kind of halfway through the year now, as we sit here. And I mean, it's been a crazy first six months of the year, no doubt about that. If we look at kind of just the RPA space, we've seen Microsoft enter the space and make some acquisitions with Soft Emotive and the like and Win Automation. And we've seen IBM just recently make an acquisition as well with WDG Automation. Give us some of your predictions. I mean, what do you see happening in the RPA or intelligent automation space in the next 6 months?
Very, very difficult to predict in this environment. I couldn't even predict what would happen tomorrow, but let's try. So what I think, this Microsoft piece, it's not actually about buying Rems Automotive. It probably came earlier with the Power Automate, Power App, and the Power Agents, you know, that Microsoft is coming to this market, and it looks like it's going to democratize it a bit, because it's becoming even easier to access these technologies for any company. Because if you have a company Azure subscription, and probably significant percentage of the companies have it, they now can just use this Power Automate for PAPs, Power App to create some forms to actually get the data in a digital form. And then Power Agents, like basically it's a no-code chatbots to orchestrate. So what I saw your podcast, heard your podcast with Guy Kirkwood about the hyper automation, or I call it intelligent automation, right? That's already becoming available through the Microsoft suite, which is basically anybody can do. So I think what we see now is the democratization of this technology. It's definitely creating a scalability. But in the next 6 months, I think what would happen because of this democratization, there are a lot of people going to play with it. There is going to be a lot of one use case bots, you know, the chat bots, RPA bots, attended bots, unattended bots. There's going to be a lot of them created. So I predict that we will see many new players coming on the market from like just people point of view who would like to do a citizen development or who would like to join this space. It's going to be even more crowded than it is now, I think. I do not see it as any strategic changes in intelligent automation space in the next 6 months, but I see a lot of the people playing with these new technologies that is going to happen. But over time, cloud and this new technology is going to play. Amazon recently released their platform for no-code development as well, right? So we see every cloud provider releasing their platforms. That makes it easier and easier to make development. And if you're familiar with this 9-box framework that I developed quite a few years ago, 5 years ago, I think, in intelligent automation, that you can see that there is a lower left corner, which is the simplest cases, is RPA or like traditional IT automation. And this is already proven, that's easy to use. And then we're moving into category of document understanding or machine learning components, and then the chatbots components. So what we see over time, that the development becoming easier and easier and easier to do. And the technology availability is growing, so technology is becoming also cheaper to use. So what we see that the more and more within the intelligent automation space, technology is becoming available for everybody and very easily, and it will generate a lot of interest in this space. But we will need to get it under control of the center of excellences and strategic relationship. Yeah? So what we see now, I think, and what we'll see, there is a boardroom from the top level approach where intelligent automation becoming important for the companies and the driven. And there will be bottom-up approach, because of this, a lot of the new technology that is very available and simple to use for citizen developers. And we are going to see somewhere convergence between a lot of this board developed from the bottom and the strategic approach from the top. And probably in 2021 and 22, Sean, we are going to have a lot of projects to actually make this combination work, you know, to get results out of it, the proper results out of it. Because I think year 2020 is going to be a year of experiments.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't have summed it up better. But I think one of the things, I mean, it's no longer about if you're going to do it. It's really about when you're going to do it now, and when can be today with all the access that we have to the tools, technologies, and platforms. And it's certainly going to be an interesting ride for the next few months and years, right? No doubt.
Oh, absolutely. Well, either you're doing it or somebody else will do it for you and take over your business. It's kind of as simple as that, right? unless it's a pure digital business, operates without any needs to talk with the clients or any needs to do processes, but I haven't seen many of them. Yeah. So I think it's pretty much everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. Pavel, I think that's been awesome. I mean, there's some amazing insights that you shared with the listeners. So I thank you very much for that. Just before we leave today, are there any parting thoughts or comments you'd like to leave the listeners with?
Yeah, well, I think, two things, right? So the one is I encourage everybody to learn a bit more in how a robot works or how a robot could think, because it is different to us. And when we look at the process automation, it's already been optimized for human performance, right? So we're using batches, we tend to combine things together to make a decision, and we have limited memory, so that's why we're doing that. But robots have totally different attributes. So just list the attributes of a person and the robot and see the differences and understand that when you automate in the process, you need to automate it best for the robot performance. Therefore, there are some changes that might be good to be done for the process. For example, debatch it. Don't do it big Excel file with hundreds of rows. Develop it as a one stream, one by one stream, and robot can perform. It can help to significantly improve the performance of the bots. And I think all of us need to learn this, need to learn how bots think and bots operate. Because I think that part is a bit missing. We're just trying to automate processes as easy. And my last comment would be, I think we just need to strap in, and it's going to be a hell of a ride for us in the next few years. So yeah, let's enjoy it.
Yeah. What a great way to end. And I actually just said to our team the other day, enjoy the journey, because it's certainly going to be a fun one, and one where we're going to see lots of evolution and deal with some fun and exciting technology. So enjoy the journey.
Excellent.
All right, Pavel, thank you very much for your time today. Much appreciated. And we look forward to seeing you face-to-face soon. But thank you once again.
Absolutely. Thanks, Sean. Have a great day.
Be part of the community and join the Automation Alliance at www.automationalliance.com.